This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 177, where AC and I are going to geek out about cutting the cord. Recorded live Jan 17th, 2017. Morning, AC.
Morning.
How's it going, buddy?
Four cups of coffee. Good.
Excellent, excellent. Caffeinated to the eyeballs, I see. Fantastic.
Absolutely. How are you doing today, buddy?
Pretty good. Obviously, not quite as well as you. You're 3 hours ahead on the caffeine front than I am. So I've got some catching up to do, I think.
I think I'm actually probably 5 or 6 hours ahead, even though I've only been awake for 3 more hours than you. But I think I've over-caffeinated today. So I gotta, I'll try and temper down my my excitement.
Hey, so something happened the other day that I was obviously thinking of you. And how excited you would be, because I was like jumping out of my seat with excitement. SpaceX return to launch and sticking the landing.
That was really cool.
Oh, and putting the actual payload into orbit. That was pretty sweet too.
I love how everyone, the news is always about the secondary mission, but the whole point is for them to, as long as the satellites get up there and they fulfill the customer requirement, then they're good.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, SpaceX return to launch after a bit of a mishap last year when they were refueling or fueling one of their rockets for a fuel test, I think, something like that. Anyway, propellant test.
Static fire, yep.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was a static fire test before launch. Anyway, they blew the thing up by accident, and this was the first time they were launching since then. So they figured out what the problem was. Well, they thought they did. They've taken some steps to remedy, and they launched some Iridium 10, I think, 10 Iridium satellites into low Earth orbit. It's going to form a new Iridium network. They're going to put 77, is it? 70 of these things into space, something like that. So we can all make, I think they're going to use it for like, the Iridium network's basically a satellite mobile network, right?
So yeah, I think so, yeah.
For all the purposes. But anyway, so the cool part was, though, is they got footage of the first stage coming the entire way back down from out of the atmosphere, all the way back down to the to the barge or the ship called Read the Instructions off the California coast. And this one launched from Vandenberg because it was a polar orbit launch. So Vandenberg's better suited to that. But anyway, they stuck the landing and it was pretty incredible to watch the footage. Thought of you leaping out of your seat.
You know, as bad as it was, I missed it. And I realized it 10 minutes after they stuck the landing, so I ran back and watched it.
Oh, nice. Well, it's big of you to admit on the podcast that you missed the return to launch.
I'm going to blame this one on being a little on the more fortunate side for space stuff than you are. So this was launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. And for me, I'm always paying attention to what happens at Cape Canaveral at the Kennedy Space Center, which is just about 140 miles away. So essentially when there's a launch event and it's not coming out of Kennedy Space Center, I'm like, nah.
Doesn't exist. That's the West Coast for you in general, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Like, something going on the West Coast, I don't really care. It's California, we try and block them out anyway. So
yeah, gotcha.
But then it goes on. I was like, oh my God, I totally missed it. But there was two things I wanted to mention about this one. Did you see the reason why SpaceX thinks why they blew up, why the static fire blew up a couple months ago?
Yeah, the whole helium.
Solid oxygen.
A helium tank or something like that.
It's either a helium tank or an oxygen tank, but what happens is like with the super cooled oxygen, there's a little bit of a gap between the inner and the outer seal, and the oxygen is so cold that it, you know, of course, oxygen is gaseous in its normal form, but then when it gets really cold, it goes to liquid, and then when it gets super, super cold, then it gets to solid. And a solid oxygen was forming in that seal, and when there was enough of a vibration, it actually triggered a spark, which blew everything up. But from the start to the end of the anomaly happening and losing data was something like 73 milliseconds is all the amount of data that they could get.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's one. But the other one, I found a link that this is really cool. They knocked this one out pretty quick this time, but there is a community-funded / staff / effort, whatever. It's called Flight Club. Not Fight Club as in like with your fists, but Flight as in F-L-I-G-H-T. And what it is it's a group that has telemetry set up so that they map the live webcast with the video footage that comes in with the actual telemetry data. And they have an animation showing, looking at it like a 3D modeling, showing it leaving Vandenberg, the ocean, Pacific Ocean, everything, how it flew a southern trajectory like towards the Yucatan Peninsula. And then you could see both the stage two keep heading out and the stage one coming in when the rockets kicked back in. And
that's awesome.
It was really cool. So
isn't it cool? Tech. Love it.
Yeah. I'll put that, those links in the show notes as well.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Hey, but today we're going to talk about geeking out about cutting the cord.
One more thing on a space bit.
Okay.
You had one, I have one.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So yesterday was a sad day on the space side where we lost Gene Cernan, who was the last Apollo astronaut, the last human to set foot and leave his footprints on the moon.
As my wife corrected me, she said, the most recent astronaut to have set foot on the moon.
That is a much better way to say it. I had a hard time telling my son that. He kept saying, so we're not going again. I'm like, no, it's just the last one at this time.
Yeah.
But I think the way that your wife Vicky said it, that's much more accurate. Richard DeZerga reminded me that there was a documentary that I had been meaning to watch. I had never watched. It's called The Last Man on the Moon.
Yeah, I've watched it. It's good.
Oh, man. I tell you, I had not watched it until last night. And watching it just a few hours after hearing the news that he had passed away, I'm not talking about like boohoo tears and all that stuff, but it was pretty damn emotional watching it. It was like you just sat there, got really depressed, and you're hearing his quotes and everything and knowing that he had just passed away.
Yeah.
It tugged on you.
I thought one of the most amazing things about that movie was how he said, you know, he basically admitted to giving up his life as a family guy for a long time. And then after his career in space, he had to start rebuilding it. But they gave up a lot as a family. And it was just nice to hear him admit that and talk about it. It was interesting.
It was, yeah. Some really cool quotes from that too. But yeah.
So now there's six moonwalkers left. That's it.
And they're all pretty old. So they're getting up there.
They're all in their 80s. So this is going to be a pattern. But yes, very sad news indeed.
But hey.
And on that somber note.
Yeah, speaking of getting disconnected and stuff, why don't we cut the cord?
Yeah, that sounds great. So like I said, we're going to talk about cutting the cord. For those of you who do not know what this episode is all about, this is a little bit of a departure from our regular scheduled programming. We haven't done one of these in a while, actually, but sometimes we do these geek outs where we deep dive into a particular topic of interest that, let's be frank, has not a lot to do with the Microsoft cloud at this point.
No, it's interesting to you and me, maybe not a lot of other people.
Well, you know, you've done a blog post and got a bunch of feedback and comments about it. Lots of people ask about this stuff, and it's becoming more and more of a trend, and it's definitely a tech topic at this point. It's not something that you're Ma and Pa will typically endeavor on doing just yet because the tech's quite complicated still. But yeah, something I've dabbled in over the years and that you've just taken a big plunge on is basically reducing our dependence on cable companies to deliver our TV and movies and shows and bits and pieces. I ditched full cable probably, I don't know, almost 2 years ago, I suppose. And we're never a big TV watcher, but it's actually quite a hard thing to do, especially in the States. And we're going to be talking about it from our perspective of living in the States and what it's like here. But we'd obviously love to hear from some listeners who've done the same thing in other countries as well. And I suspect, you know, many of the same kinds of concepts apply. So yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about cutting your dependence on the traditional method of getting television in the States, which is via like the likes of Comcast and all those folks, which is the big cable companies. So you've taken a plunge recently. Why don't you kick us off with a little bit of commentary on how you used to get your television and how you used to consume your media, so to speak.
Sure. One thing I would like to add to what you just said is that I think that there's going to be people who are going to want to split hairs on this. And, you know, they look at me and they look at what your situation and say, yeah, you didn't really cut the cord.
Yeah.
And let me just be completely blunt. I don't really care what your definition is, not you specifically, but whoever's listening to this. To me, I'm using the term cut the cord in the sense that the general population uses it, which is I'm simply trying to, I was in the past a DirecTV subscriber for well over 10 years. I got DirecTV because there's nothing wrong with cable in my area. I was DirecTV is a satellite company, but I got it because I liked NFL Sunday Ticket, so I could get every NFL game that was available to me. And I've been doing that for years. And because it was simple. I mean, it just worked. So my household, like yours, we don't watch a lot of TV. If there's a show that I like to watch, it's generally an on-demand kind of a show that I can go grab from Netflix or HBO or Amazon. There are a few TV shows that I enjoy watching on occasion when I'm just like, I want to watch something, I'm bored. And I'd go find like Deadliest Catch from Discovery or like Law and Order or something like that. But really for me, TV in my living room is all about live sports or Xbox, which we don't play a whole lot. So when I say cutting the cord, I was trying to cut the whole world of, I don't have many options for TV I can only get it one way, and I'm going to pay for the convenience. That's a key thing to keep in mind. I'm paying for the convenience to DirecTV to make it really easy. You guys come in, you put a couple boxes in my house. There's no drilling holes or anything like that, but make it to where I can just take the remote, turn it on. Kids can find it. I can find it. Wife can find it. So the situation that I had going into this was that during the NFL, American football, during the NFL season, I was spending $211 a month. And that's for like 4 months for my DirecTV subscription plus the NFL Sunday ticket. And during the off season, I was spending $144 a month. That was just DirecTV. And that was to get the smallest package cable offering or channel offering that included two or three channels that I wanted to have in order to watch the kind of auto racing that I enjoy watching. So IMSA, IndyCar, F1. That are not on the normal on the big channels. They're more on like the Fox Sports channel, or they're on NBC Sports or stuff like that. So I had those. I also have a Plex server, which we'll talk more about that in a bit, but I also had a Plex server that we use for, I have a bunch of DVDs and TV shows that we ripped over the years, home movies, home pictures, access, stuff like that. And that's just been running on a machine that I've had in my office that, you know, there's an app on Xbox and, you know, whatever, in our house. So that's the situation where I came from. And we'll get into what I did to kind of change that up. But what was the scenario like where you came from? What were you spending 2 years ago?
Yeah, pretty similar, but not quite as large, obviously. So I wasn't such a big sports fan as you are. And so I'd watch local football games on free-to-air TV on the regular channels. And so I didn't buy NFL Sunday ticket or what have you. But my cable bill was probably in the order of about $140, I guess, a month, maybe $150 at times. And I was just like, I'm sick of paying for like 500 channels of crap that I don't watch, right? And it was more of a principle thing than a money thing per se. Like, the convenience was really convenient, right? Just being able to turn it on, and it was generally fairly bulletproof experience, right? But we were paying for a DVR box that we didn't use. We didn't really record any television. We watched mostly on-demand TV now from Netflix, Amazon, and HBO. And I just sort of felt like the principle of the thing of spending all this money for a service that I wasn't really using. And it just sort of felt like people get duped into this and adding more and more stuff without really realizing it. And that, obviously, that's the cable company's jobs, is to get you to pay them more money.
Yeah.
But I sort of felt like we'd ended up in this situation without really even trying. And so we wanted to think about it. So
so you were spending the same amount. One of the things that I felt that when I was getting into this, I've looked at it multiple times throughout the years, and I always felt like it was, even for someone that's technical as me, I found it to be very intimidating and very frustrating and too much work. And it wasn't a very high wife acceptance factor. And so it's what changed it for me now is what I'll share. Mm. But a couple things you said, just to make sure that I don't know how it is outside the United States as far as TV goes, but just for a scenario to kind of level set the playing field, you use the term the normal channels to get the local sports, or at least the over-the-air sports.
Yeah.
So in the U.S., generally what we have is in major metropolitan areas, or most cities, you have local channels that are usually going to be they're going to be syndicating one of the main networks that we have in the United States. So that's either Fox, NBC, ABC, CBS, and then there's a public broadcasting station, the PBS as well. And all of those stations, they all broadcast over the air. So big antenna, you can put an antenna on the top of your house, you can go pull in those signals, but it's kind of a pain to do that stuff. And so generally what people have done to get really good reception is they go sign up with a cable company or a satellite company, and they get those local channels from those same sources. But then people like Comcast or Time Warner or DirecTV or Dish Network, they also package in a ton of other channels to go along with it. So similar to you, when I looked at it, you were spending about the same amount I was spending on the non-football season. And I looked at it and said, realistically, I think I got something like 150 or 350 or 250, somewhere in the 200s-ish channels. And I probably never watched any more than a total of 10 or 15 of those channels in the entire 15 years I've had DirecTV.
I think everybody's in that boat, but somehow you get duped into spending all this money on stuff you don't really need.
Yeah, they package it. It's like when you buy a car, right? Like, I bought my car and I wanted the technology package in my car for something, and they made me get the cold weather package. I live in freaking Florida. I don't need heated seats, right? But I have them because it was important to me to get the tech package.
Hey, a warm butt is always important, I say.
It was. It really was. Yeah. So when it comes down to it, to me, when you looked at this, you have to, the first thing I felt like I had to do was, let's look at what's important. What do you get? What kind of services do you get? And then how are you going to go through and replace those services? And how hard is it? And for me, that really broke down into three different categories. It's the networks. So NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox. How do I get those guys? Mm-hmm. And for me, the answer for that was there's local channels. And so I have to figure out how to get my local channels over the air, and you get those for free.
It's definitely worth pointing out that in the States, I believe it's regulated that they have to offer those local channels for free over the air, I believe. There's something like that. There's some law or some rule that says that the local TV providers have to provide those four or five, whatever it is, five or six channels over the air for free, and that they can't. That's part of the deal of being the provider for those things. I don't know the ins and outs of that deal, but or what that means. But basically, in a nutshell, anywhere in the States, you could put up an antenna and get the five or six we call local channels, right?
Most of the population in the United States, you live within the range of being able to put up an antenna, aim it at a station and be able to get that station. Hopefully, and generally in most major metropolitan cities, you have most of those channels, their towers are in the same general area. And so you can point your antenna at that area and get them all.
Gotcha.
They're not spread over the city. So for me, I had to figure out, how am I going to get all those local channels? And there's a lot of different, I live about 20 miles away from downtown. So I know our story here is a little bit similar. So I was, how am I going to get those local guys? And for me, what I did is I had to go buy an antenna, an HD antenna. And for me, I also wanted to get a tuner. Now, a lot of TVs have tuners in them, like one or two tuners, and they can just use the signal from the antenna to get the channels. But what I want to do is I didn't want to tie my antenna to one TV. I wanted to be able to make it available throughout my house.
Exactly. Yeah, me too. So I think we're on the similar page on this stuff. How we get those signals is a little different though, right? So what you ended up going and getting one of these HD antennas and to go get the signal, but you plug it into a digital tuner box that is on your network, same as me, right? An HD home run?
Yeah, I bought an antenna. It's called the eSky Amplified 150-mile antenna, but I'll put a link to my blog post. You can see all the parts and the links to stuff where I got it on Amazon. It's all right there, but I bought this antenna and I ended up mounting it ultimately up in my attic and had just pointed it towards downtown, and I'm getting all the channels that I need to pull in there. Actually, I'm pulling in 50 some odd channels. I'm only interested in about five or six of them.
Nice.
There's a lot of religious stuff all in my area I found doing on public over the air TV.
I found all these, like, the Woodinville Council meeting channel. Wow, can't wait to tune into that at prime time.
Yeah, it wasn't
gonna be riveting.
So that wasn't exactly one that I quote unquote missed on DirecTV.
No. I didn't even know it existed.
Anyway, exactly.
So while you get yours over the air, I took a slightly different route, and rather than going and buying a antenna, which I could probably have done, I just dropped my cable subscription down to what's called basic cable. And this is more basic than what people are probably thinking is basic cable. This is like again, I think it's regulated that they have to offer this package, which basically just has all the local channels over the cable medium, I suppose you want to call it.
Yeah.
For almost free. It's like $9 a month or something. You get them in HD. There's actually a whole lot of channels on there that they don't tell you about, and they don't advertise this package on most cable providers' websites. Don't tell you that they carry this. You can't sign up to it over the internet. You got to call their call center and you got to say, I want to drop my cable subscription back to basic cable. And they'll be like, well, but don't you miss HD? And isn't your house going to burn down? And basically hell and fury is going to open up and you're going to fall into a pit of despair. You're like, no, that's cool. I just want basic cable. And so they don't make it easy. And they kind of go out of their way to lie about what you're going to get. Because you do get HD channels over cable. And you get a whole lot of them as well. That's what I went rather than the over-the-air thing. But I could have gone either way. It's just that was the simpler at the time.
Yeah, and so you plug that into your HD home runs. We both have a thing called an HD home run. Do you have the Kinect?
Yeah, I think so. No, the Prime, I think.
You have the Prime, so it's a black box?
It is a black box, yeah. And it has three cable tuners in it. So it can tune three different channels, if you will, at a time.
Okay, that's similar to what I have. I got one level down from you. It's called the HD Home Run Connect. It's $100. So my antenna was $30 or $35. The Home Run Connect was $105. They're really hard to find right now, and I'll explain why when we get to the Plex part in a bit. And what that does is it has three things you plug into it in the back: power, a coax cable from your antenna, or in your case, from your cable subscription from the wall. Mm-hmm. And then it has a Cat5 network port coming out the back of it. And so you plug that into your home network.
Correct. Yeah.
Now, I think that we both, I'm not entirely as familiar with your scenario, but do we both get TV then the same way? From the tuner?
Yeah, I think so. So at that point, I mean, HD Home Run come with a bunch of apps, right? So there's the HD Viewer app, Windows 10 and Mac and things. And you can just, if you just plug into your home network or on your own Wi-Fi or what have you, you could just open up the HD Home Run app and start watching channels that it detects. You could have it go through and do the scan, all that sort of stuff. But typically I don't sit to watch TV on my laptop. I want it on my TV. So that's where we've sort of taken things a little further and said, cool, we want to watch TV on the big screen. So that's where Plex comes in.
Yeah, so that's what I did, is I plugged it into my network, and I already had a machine on my network that was running Plex. Now, I've got a box that is way overpowered for Plex. It's an older server that I built as a virtual machine server. It's got dual Xeon, quad-core Xeons in it. It's a badass machine.
We could tell you're an ex-SharePoint developer.
Actually, two of those.
If you've got something that could basically, is effectively Chernobyl in your closet, well, you're a SharePoint developer. Yeah.
My closet has to stay cracked open by about 2 inches so it does not reheat in there. Seriously, I'm looking at it right now. It's still cracked open. Yeah. It even has an AC passive return and a vent coming into it as well.
Nice. So, yeah, I guess... Yeah. You got that. I just use my regular PC for Plex. It stays on all the time anyway.
You can do that. I know I have a friend of mine that's doing this as well, and he has one of the Nighthawk Asus routers that actually has Plex built into it that he uses.
Oh, wow. So, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's got Plex. But now, it's a little limiting in terms of what you can do with it. Like, he can't do the setup that I have or that you and I have, where what we had to do was go get a plug-in and install it on. There's a little kind of a manual process you got to run through, but... create a plugin or take a plugin and install it in Plex. And what that did is that allows Plex, there's a part in Plex where you can go to channels and it creates a new channel. When you go to that channel, it effectively makes a UI that you can then pick from the different channels that your HD Home Run tuner is advertising to you. And then the Plex add-in or plugin will do an exclusive lock on one of those tuners so that someone else on your network can't change the tuner channel that it's tuned to. And so it pulls that in. So now when I want to go watch TV, like say if I want to watch NBC, I did this past last 2 weekends for all the NFL playoff games, and it ran great, was that I sit down at my TV, I pick whatever thing I'm using to, we'll get into that later, whatever I'm using to be able to watch Plex can be either... on my laptop, can be on my phone, my iPad, my Xbox, whatever it is. I pick Plex. I then go to channels. And then one of my channels is called HDHR Viewer. I pick that. And then I go get a list of channels and I can choose the channels I want to pick from. So it's got a little two extra steps in there that I don't like. I kind of wish that I could have a channel in Plex that was NBC and it just knew how to bypass all that stuff.
It's a couple of extra clicks, right?
It is. I looked at the guy's source code for the thing. I don't understand the language that's being used. I got to spend some more time on it, but it doesn't look like it'd be too bad. It'd be nice to be able to have like five channels you install in each one. One's for NBC, one's for ABC, et cetera.
Yeah, that'd be kind of nice, wouldn't it? Just to be able to skip straight to it. Yeah, so I do the exact same thing. I use Plex on our devices around the house. Like our TV has, we have a Samsung TV and it has a built-in Plex app that we've been using. We have a Roku that we were using, which also has a Plex app. And then things like iPads and what have you can obviously have Plex apps available for them, Android and iOS devices and things. And so we'll use that to jump on Plex and then be able to tune in live TV. Also, there's the web app as well. So when you're out of the house, you can get into the web app and watch live TV from your house, which is pretty cool, as well as all of the native apps can be set up to work remotely as well.
Yeah.
And actually, Plex has a really nice system of proxying TV. So by that I mean, if you don't open up your network correctly to your house, but you've still got Plex logged into the server. It makes an outbound connection out to their server, and you can still watch live TV, but it proxies through their service, I believe. And so it makes it a little slower and a bit less bandwidthy, but for the most part, it works pretty well.
Yeah, it works. I love it. I tried using it yesterday, actually, when I was at my co-work spot and was watching, turned TV on when I was having lunch, and it worked great streaming straight from the house. So that's something I could not do before very easily, was to watch over-the-air channels and on any of my movies, TV shows, home movies, pictures. I get all that stuff straight from the Plex app.
Yeah.
So that covers one kind of content, which is the... You said you were using your TV for that. I bought a Roku and put that on each one of the TVs. I love it because every TV now has the exact same experience. They all get data from Plex. And so unlike before, it's the exact same story on every single TV.
Yeah, that's pretty nice, actually. We only have one TV, so we're a bit simpler. But yeah, that's nice if the family don't have to learn different things for different parts of the house.
Effectively, I really only have one TV. I have one in my office and one in my bedroom, and I never use either one of those. But for $40 for a little Plex stick, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So what about recording stuff? The last bit, let me go back to that in just a second. So the last bit on that is, how do you then get your, what we used to call like premium channels or cable channels?
Yeah.
So like say Discovery or ESPN or Disney or any of those guys. And for that, there's a lot of different options you can go with. I looked at three different options. There may be more, but I really only looked at three of them. I looked at the PlayStation View service.
Mm.
I looked at DirecTV Now, and I looked at Sling. And I ended up going with Sling, but really it's one of those, like, if you're looking for a sedan and you're going shopping for cars, you get a sedan. Someone says, I bought a Chevy, and then one says, I bought a Ford, and then one says, I bought a BMW. Why did you go that direction? Well, I mean, there's just tons of reasons you can go with. Same thing with this stuff. For me, I liked Sling, the apps, the ability to watch Sling on my laptop when I'm out of the house or on my iPad, the ability to do it, to have an app that was on Roku. It worked very easily. It was very easy. I liked the experience of the app. And I liked the different packages they offer as well. So what I did is I bought a subscription to Sling, and I can ramp it up and ramp it down. And I spend anywhere from $20 a month for minimal channels that I need to get the sports that I want.
Mm.
Up to during the NFL season, I can ramp that up to $50 a month to get absolutely everything that I want, with the exception of the NFL Sunday Ticket, which is a DirecTV only offering. I think they offer that as a streaming thing, but I effectively, with a couple one-time purchases, so an antenna and a home run, those cost $150.
Yep.
A Roku, a nice Roku for the living room, and then two sticks for the two other TVs, that costs a total of $200. So for a total investment of $350 up front, and then spending anywhere from $20 to $55 a month on Sling plus the $5 Plex Pass subscription, I get all the content that I was getting from DirecTV. So saving about $100, anywhere from $100 to $160 or $170 a month from what I was spending before.
Nice. That's really good. Yeah, I guess we don't do the Sling thing, but if we were really pushed on the sports side or something like that, then we would dive down that route. We do subscribe to HBO Now, which is their on-demand streaming version of, you know, what they offer for non-HBO cable customers. We get that. We get Amazon Prime Video, obviously, and Netflix. And between those three, that kind of covers most of our watching habits.
Yeah, we have a Netflix subscription as well. We have a Amazon Video subscription through our Prime account. But then we don't do HBO Now. We add HBO and we pay for it for a few months when Game of Thrones or Silicon Valley comes out. We binge those two shows and then I cancel the subscription.
Yeah, fair enough, too. That's actually, weirdly, with our TV, I think we got 12 months of HBO or something when we bought our TV. Mm-hmm. So that's how we're currently still on the free version. But yeah. But so this is great for watching on demand and watching live TV. But what about when you have a show? This is where we differ a little bit about recording stuff, because you seem to want to record things a little more than we do. So what path did you go down to record stuff?
So I'm gonna start with a little disclaimer that this is a bit in flux. I don't DVR as much as I don't need to DVR as much as I thought I did.
Mm.
I find that when I want to sit down and I want to watch TV, before it was always first, let's go straight to what I've recorded on DirecTV's DVR and let me go pick from one of those things. But in reality, if someone said, you can't use that, which right now they're saying that, if I can't use something like that, then what would I do? And there's a lot of kind of on-demand stuff from the channels in Sling that they have to offer. But I also find that I can find anything that I want to watch if I want to go to Netflix or Amazon Prime or one of those.
I'm obviously in the same boat. We thought we needed a DVR, but we got rid of it and we kind of haven't gone back to it.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's only been 2 weeks for me, but I don't miss it. Now, I know Sling, it does have a DVR service that's in beta right now that they are going to, they're rolling out for people to test. I'm on the waiting list for that. I jumped into this whole thing too late. And of course, they got overloaded with requests. So that'll be nice when that's an offering. Hopefully it doesn't cost anything extra, then we'd have to reconsider it. The other one, though, that we're doing is DVRing our local channels. Mm. And what we did is there's a beta version of Plex 1.2. So if you're using Plex today, then you're on version 1.3 dot something. But if you go back to version 1.2, beta 4 of 1.2 has a DVR service in it. Now, the UX for it is awesome. You basically go in, you tell the DVR that where's the tuner that it can actually use. It goes ahead and grabs that tuner. It looks like ultimately you probably will be able to get to the point where you don't even need a plugin to get to those tuners. It looks like Plex is going to be able to do it, you know, out of the box. So that the story may get better there. But you just go search for something, say you want to record it, say record it. The experience of going to say that you want to record it is so much better than I had on DirecTV and what I've seen on Comcast. It goes ahead and records it, and it records it as an MKV file onto the same storage media of where you used to store stuff, where you store like your home movies or TV shows or whatever with normal Plex. And so what I did is I created a new folder for recorded TV. I told Plex to DVR to that location, and then I created a new library on in Plex and pointed to that new folder. So I have home movies, music, photos, going all the way down channels, and then another option of recorded TV, and I can pick from that and watch my stuff. Now, I say that that's a bit in flux because I've noticed where the audio and the video gets out of sync pretty bad with the recordings that it's doing. I can only attribute that to Plex, because when I watch live TV, there's no problem. When I watch stuff that I've ripped through Plex, or that I watch through Plex, so ripped off the DVDs or Blu-rays that I own, no problem. All that stuff works. It's just the stuff that Plex is recording. And so I think that Plex may be having a little bit of a problem with that part.
Yeah, gotcha.
That's the one thing.
Yeah, I loaded the DVR Plex version quite a while back and played around with it. I think it was back when it was in beta 3, though. I can't remember if it was beta 4. Anyway, tried a few recordings out. Seemed to work pretty well, but like I said, we just don't DVR anything. So I ended up, you know, hitting the auto update button sometime in Plex, and it updated the server version to the server version that doesn't have the DVR anymore. So honestly, I didn't even notice. So for now, unless I have a burning desire to DVR stuff, I'll stick with the latest version of Plex server.
Yeah, a couple little things you want to pay attention to at that, I will say. First of all, you have to uninstall your existing Plex install in order to install the beta 4 version 1.2. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to go through your reconfiguration or anything. It was a piece of cake. I uninstalled the old one, installed the new one, and it looked just like the exact same Plex I had. It just had a DVR menu popping up.
Yeah, gotcha.
That's one. The other one that you want to pay attention to is, like you said, you don't do the auto update, because if you do that, it gets to the latest version. Mm-hmm. It ran pretty well. But the one thing, as far as DVR stuff goes, I mean, I looked at a couple different options, and it looks like there's two things that I always put into one category of DVR, and it's actually DVR and time shifting. DVR is what we used to know as VCR, it's just the digital version of it. Mm-hmm. Time shifting is the ability to pause and rewind or fast forward through live TV that you're watching.
Yep.
So Plex does do some of that, actually does a decent job of that. But when I look at Sling kind of does and kind of doesn't. So like some channels have decided not to let Sling do that. For example, I can't pause and rewind ESPN.
Oh, strange.
Yeah, so some of them don't do that. We'll see if the DVR service that Sling is going to come out with is going to offer that.
Gotcha.
I looked at a TiVo solution instead of using Roku's, mm-hmm. because TiVo does a really good job with this stuff. But man, TiVo is
expensive.
God, I think from my Roku investment was $200. Mm-hmm. My TiVo investment was going to have to be $550 plus $15 a month. Yeah. For service. I was like, I don't want DVR that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, now that's, I mean, I use the play pause a lot when we're watching TV channels, if I have to step away to do something else. But I guess that's kind of as far as my DVR-ish tendencies go. Cool. So that's pretty nice. So now you've got Plex everywhere. You watch live TV through there, same as me, but we get channels. You get them over the air. I get them over a cable thing. Some people would argue that's not cutting the cord. I'm arguing that for $9, I don't want to crawl around in my attic and put up an antenna, which I may do someday, but I'm not dependent on the cable company anymore, which is good. And then on our devices and stuff, we can leave the house and get access to things through Plex and so forth and these other apps. Any other sort of gotchas that you hit? I did this a while ago, so I was really interested in reading your blog post for kind of what's new and improved on the scene from when I last looked at it. And it's funny that we've come to almost the same conclusion, except the sling piece is obviously something new.
Yeah, there's a handful of things that people are going to look at this and going to say, well, why did you do it? I mean, first of all, for me, primarily, it was a cost thing, going from either $144 or $211 a month down to either $20 or $50 a month. So I'm saving over 70%. And from the upfront cost that I had of $349 of what I spent, I'm going to recover all those costs within 3 months. So personally, I like that. The other thing that I really like about it is that I don't have to pick up the phone to call anybody to upgrade or downgrade or really mess around with my subscription. So
all online.
Yeah, I can do everything online. I can very much move things around on a month-to-month basis. It's very simple to change subscriptions and everything. And I like that I have more control over, it's like the TV ad shows for Sling. It's take control of your TV. That's really what I felt like I've done. I have more control over it. The local channels, I'm getting all that stuff for free. And then the rest of the stuff, my wife, you know, we got our first bill from our charge from Sling. It was a little bit more than my wife was expecting. And I'm like, look, if we don't like that, then let's just cut it down to $20 a month. And let's see if we want it. If not, then we'll switch back and we'll add a little bit of stuff back. So it's just like, I don't need 3 DVDs coming from Netflix. I can just do 2 streaming screens and I'm happy.
The other thing with taking control, right, is like it's when you leave the house and you go away traveling or what have you, it goes with you, right?
Yeah.
You're still in control of it there. Whereas I was finding like we were spending all this money on a cable bill and I couldn't even leave the house with it. You know? And when we go away on holiday as a family, this way I can download. Now Netflix has offline viewing, things like that. If you have an internet connection, HBO works remotely as well, HBO Now. So we're able to do that while we're out of the house, which was really super nice.
Yeah, like you said, Netflix can do offline viewing. Amazon Video can do offline viewing. Plex has the ability where you can cache shows from your own that you've recorded.
Download locally.
You can download locally. And then for me, Sling, I can also watch live over the air TV if my house is online and if I've got a live connection that I can use through Plex as well. And with Sling, I have an app on my iPad and I can watch Sling on my laptop or whatever. I watched the entire college national football championship from my desk on one monitor streaming through Plex. And I thought I got a much better signal. There's a few little quality issues on my signal that I haven't really figured out yet. I can't figure out where, I think it's a Plex issue. I think it's a Plex plugin issue, like specifically NBC and CBS, while it doesn't impact the viewing experience of the TV, my wife and I were watching one of the football games, and she looked at me, I looked at her, and she's like, do you see that? I'm like, yeah, I do. I can still see the football, I can watch a hockey game, and I can see the puck just fine. But it's not like that really sharp, crisp kind of look it's almost like, remember the old dual scan LCD screens we had on laptops?
You got a bit of ghosting or something?
It's almost like a little bit of a ghost, like these little lines that'll show up a little bit. I mean, it's more, I kind of look at it and go, the perfectionist in me goes, I don't like that. I got to fix that. But it's really not.
Gotcha.
I'm not rushing to the attic to try and move my antenna around or anything. So.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I also think you've got to have a really good, one of the things I learned, I should say, during this is that you've got to have a good internal network around your house. And whether that be Wi-Fi or preferably wired, that's really important. So we have a wired connection into every device that watches Plex. So back of our TV, PCs around the house, it's all wired, right? And the reason for that is, so Plex will take your 1080 or what have you signal from the HD home run, and if the device supports watching it in that resolution, it will send it to you in that resolution and also in the codecs that it supports. So it may not do transcoding on the fly if it doesn't need to. And that means that if you're watching a 1080 signal straight from the HD home run on a PC around the house, typically it can deal with H.264 and all of the things it needs to be able to watch that. But the bandwidth is pretty high on that. So you want to make sure that your wireless network's bulletproof if you're on a laptop, or that you're plugged in on Ethernet to get a decent signal. Because I was noticing that if I was in a shady Wi-Fi zone, that the TV signal effectively drops out because it just can't keep up with the bandwidth required for that resolution and codec.
Yeah, I'm going to contradict you a little bit on that, because what I think that part's going to really depend. Our living room TV is wired and has a wired connection coming into the Roku. Mm. But the other two Rokus that we have, the two Roku streaming sticks that we have, those are all wireless. And I'm pretty darn impressed with the performance. Like, I don't notice the difference between on wired versus wireless.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, so that I was pretty impressed with that. And I have I have a decent router in my house. Yeah, I have a wireless. No, I think I might have a wireless AC. Go figure, I should, right?
Absolutely.
I have a wireless 802.11n, definitely. Some devices can do AC, but most of them are all 802.11n and getting great signals. Even my neighbor, I was over my neighbor's house and just tried it out, and we still got a good signal from it. So that part you have to kind of figure out. The thing that I did like about the whole experience and that I did find was that there are a couple websites that you want to check out, like a website called tvfool.com. Mm. And then I found a couple apps for my iPhone that I used that used my local network to connect to my tuner and showed me the signal coming in. Mm. It was able to let me change the different channels that were coming in and view the signal. So when I was in the attic, I was able to see when I kind of maneuvered. I thought it was aimed in the right direction, but it even showed a map on the app. And I have screenshots of this in the blog post. On the map, it showed me where I was. It showed me a compass of where I was, where the phone was currently pointing, and the direction, and where all the my local channels were. And so, just for kicks, I went through and I pointed them all downtown, and I got all the signals. And I looked at the signal strength; stuff was good. And then I'm like, I wonder if I can get to Orlando. So I turned the antenna a complete 180 degrees facing south, aimed at the Orlando channels, and I was able to pick up the Orlando channels as well from my house. So wow. I mean, now. I wasn't getting as good of a signal from those because they're a little bit farther away. My antenna is a 150-mile antenna, which, I mean, people are like, that's overkill. Like, I spent $35 on it. So, I mean, yeah, technically it's overkill, but it's only $30. It's a one-time purchase.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap.
So I put links to those things and how I was able to figure out the right signal and stuff. There's also, if you want to see what the experience looks like, I did a little video, put my camera up in front of my TV, and I went through the whole Roku and Plex, Roku Sling, watching live channels. I showed a PlayStation View as well. I'm not a fan of PlayStation View. I thought the user experience sucked. And frankly, when I tried to cancel my subscription to it or my trial, I went and logged into PlayStation View. And the only thing that I could find was a mention that I had paid $0 for a trial subscription, but it didn't tell me what the trial subscription was for. And there was no place for me to cancel it. So the only thing that I did was I went back in and I deleted my credit card from my account and waited to get an email from them saying, hey, your trial got canceled because you didn't have a credit card on file. I'm like, well, okay, that's me canceling.
Wow. Interesting.
Sling was better than that, to that respect.
Yeah, nice. Nice. Excellent. So you're totally officially cable free. Have you dropped your old subscriptions yet?
I think so. This weekend, I uninstalled all of the hardware, all the DirecTV hardware out of all the TVs. There's a thing called a swim module. There's another power module. So my DirecTV 3 receivers are in a box with their power supplies. The swim module is out of it. The remotes are out of it. The batteries are out. Everything is in a box on my dining room table. So I'm not watching DirecTV. And I think yesterday, the only part, my wife's only job in this entire thing was she's supposed to call DirecTV and cancel that part of it. So I think she did that yesterday. I just got the thumbs up. Yeah, she did that yesterday. I'm off DirecTV.
Gotcha. Nice. Nice. There you go. Perfect. Well, it must feel pretty good.
Oh, well, I mean, having $100 more a month is really good.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was surprised at how this wasn't that bad. I mean, relatively speaking, $350 as upfront cost. The overall experience, my wife, it finds it very easy to understand everything. It took a little bit of, you know, experience with it. But the first time we played with a Roku, our jaws hit the ground like, holy crap, this is fast.
Yeah, that good.
My kids, my 11-year-old son, he understands how to use it. He had to understand where he has to go for what the difference between NBC, CBS, and ESPN is. But that wasn't hard to explain that. And all the hardware showed up. I started screwing around with this stuff on a Friday night, and everything was completely finished on Sunday morning, and it was not all day Saturday. I started playing with about 3 or 4 hours on a Friday night. About 2 or 3 hours is more accurate. I played around 2 or 3 hours on a Friday night. I spent about an hour and a half with it on Saturday morning and about 2 hours with it on Sunday morning, and it was done. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't all that bad. The worst part about it, frankly, was getting the local channels to show up and the tuner. The HD home runs are hard to find because since Plex announced DVR support for HD home runs, then they're sold out everywhere. So I ordered it 3 times. The first 2 times, they said they were in stock and they had shipped, but then Amazon kicked back and said, your order's been canceled because they don't have it in stock. Yeah. Even though I actually had a UPS tracking number that was on the way.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, never showed up, but it never left the UPS distribution center.
Bizarre.
But the third one did. And I did a bunch of research up front and asked a bunch of questions for a lot of friends and stuff. But my goal was to put a blog post up to really make it simple, frankly, for everybody. But a lot of my neighbors were interested in it as well. And I know that a bunch of people in my neighborhood have been watching the post as well because they're interested in doing the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, obviously, technology is getting simpler and simpler, and the stuff's becoming a bit more open to everybody. So it should only keep going in that direction, hopefully. Like you said, we'll link to your blog post. People can read more about stuff there and start trying out cutting the cable for themselves.
Two last things I'll drop on you on this one. If you're listening to the show, you're technical enough to be able to do this. This seriously was not that hard. And especially if someone can tell you the directions on where to go. And I tried to do that for you. So I tried to simplify it for you. If you listen to the show and this is not the first show you listen to, then you're already in. You've already been selected in. Your parents can't speak for them. The other part that I would say about this that I've just now forgotten.
I'm only kidding.
Yeah, I'm done. I can't remember what it was. If you're technical enough to listen to the show, then you're technical enough to do this whole thing. The user experience for this is not bad at all, and it's pretty darn reliable. So it all depends on how much time and how simple you want to make this whole thing. And you can make this complicated as hell, and there's a ton of other options to go with. TiVo, all these other streaming services and stuff. I'm pretty happy the one I came up with that works for me, and your mileage may vary.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from anybody who's done this in other countries as well. AC and I are obviously in the US, and it's pretty much the same on both coasts, even though they sometimes feel like different countries from time to time. And
but hey, we just went through an election.
Exactly. So if you're in another country, somewhere in Europe perhaps, or Australasia, or anywhere really, we'd love to hear and tweet us about your experiences and what services you use and all that sort of stuff. I'm sure the rest of our listeners would love to hear. Leave comments on AC's blog post as well. Go up there and drop some comments about what your experience is like in other countries. I'm sure people would love to hear. Great chat, AC.
Absolutely. Our 30-minute discussion took 53 minutes, bud.
Yeah, there you go. That was a good one. I hope somebody gets something out of it.
Absolutely. Good talking to you again, bud.
Right on. Cheers.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and a Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes for each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us. Participate in upcoming interviews and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.